One of the best souvenirs of traveling is the perspective it can give you on the place you call home. Coming up, we'll hear why you don't have to dread winter, as our listeners in Anchorage can verify, just start to enjoy it like they do in Alaska. And an astronomer from Virginia helps us imagine the otherworldly views you'd find on other planets in our solar system. Let's start the hour seeing what we can learn from the top nation, once again, in U.S. News & World Report's annual ranking of best countries in the world, Switzerland. I believe we can learn more about our own homes, our own nation, and our own lives when we travel and look back at our world from a distance. Susie Levine served as the United States Ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein, and she did just that from the Swiss Alps. Susie joins us in our studio now to share a few observations on what we could learn from the Swiss and what they could learn from us. Susie Levine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first off, tell us just very briefly, how did you end up serving in Switzerland as our ambassador, and how was your tenure?
Got a chance to know President, then-Senator Obama during his campaign, and he and his team saw my work in innovation, in startups, in youth outreach, and in executive leadership. And when he had the position available for Ambassador to Switzerland Liechtenstein, he and his team asked me to take that, and I was humbled and honored to do so.
Very nice. Now, I love this notion, as I mentioned in the introduction, that when we leave our country and look at it from a distance, we can recognize ways that we might be able to get our country better designed or learn from other countries. Tell me about a couple of dimensions of Switzerland that you'd like to bring home. What can we learn from Switzerland?
As an ambassador, I was very blessed to see and come across something in my time there that I could bring back to the United States. And I did. I didn't just see it. I brought it back to the United States. And that's the Swiss model of apprenticeship. In Switzerland, 70 to 80% of kids don't do high school. They only have 9 years of mandatory education. And in the 10th grade, 70 to 80% of kids go into apprenticeship. And that apprenticeship is much broader than we in the United States have come to know. It is apprenticeship in software development, in retail, in hospitality, in advanced manufacturing.
Would we call it the trades?
It's not just the trades. Here
more.
In the United States,
yeah.
We have atrophied our apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Alexander Hamilton was an apprentice.
Yeah.
Benjamin Franklin was an apprentice. But over the years, especially since the 1940s, in the United States, apprenticeship really has dwindled to just being focused on the trades, and those are very important apprenticeships.
Mm-hmm.
However, in Switzerland, it is expansive. It is software development. It is Google has apprentices in Switzerland. Swisscom, their telecommunications lead, has apprentices in Switzerland. You have multimedia apprenticeships.
And why is that better than what we have?
What it does is at age 15, 16 years old, their education system is highly concentrated. And so you've already learned a ton up to the 9th grade.
Right.
Starting in the 10th grade, you...
It's a fork in the road.
Well,
You have to make a decision, long-term decision.
And no, actually, mm-hmm. because they have built their system to be fully permeable. You can be an apprentice and go on to higher education.
Mm.
You can go through high school and become an apprentice. You actually can apprentice up to age 50, 55, depending on the different canton. But it allows them to have a culture of career instead of a culture of university. In the United States, only 30% of people actually get a four-year university degree. Are the other 70% dullards? No. Those other 70%, it wasn't the path for them.
Right.
And in some cases, it might be the path for them, but they can't afford it. In Switzerland, everybody has a path to the Swiss dream. And it makes it incredibly equity delivering in the country. Think about those people that you know who are more hands-on,
mm-hmm.
who were a little bored in school, perhaps a little mischievous in school,
mm-hmm.
where it just wasn't the mode for learning. And think how well they would have succeeded had they been able to have a practical versus theoretical education is how they reference
it. So what are the stumbling blocks to that vision here in the United States? Is it a psychological sort of pride and people want to kind of do what is supposed to be a more successful career path?
The keys to success in Switzerland are illustrative of the challenges in the United States. In Switzerland, the businesses are producers and not just consumers of talent. They invest 60% of the funding into this system, 30% from the states or cantons, and 10% from the federal government. An individual, when they're doing this apprenticeship, they are 3 or 4 days a week in their apprenticeship, 1 or 2 days a week in school, and the school relates to the apprenticeship. If you're a cheese-making apprentice, you are also learning microbiology. Everybody's learning citizenship. And what you have with it is you can go from your cheesemaking apprenticeship on to become a business leader. In fact, several of their members of their federal council over time have started their careers as apprentices. So it is extraordinary. And you meet with CEOs and many of them have started their careers as apprentices. So in the United States, I'd say it's stigma, it's business adoption, and it's the robustness of the system to be able to foster these paths.
Yep. Susie Levine's our guest on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us what she observed as the U.S. ambassador to Switzerland for 3 years during the Obama administration. Susie continues to advocate for women in entrepreneurial and tech roles, and she has a TED Talk on what we can learn from the Swiss. You'll find web links with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Susie, what's another example of if we traveled in Switzerland and we pause and we get to know the Swiss and we look back at our homeland, what might we take home as a better appreciation to make our country better?
One is multilingualism, which we know that from a neuroscience standpoint, it helps you also be more cognitively flexible. Another is punctuality, Swiss timing. It's real.
Just right here, you gave me a call at the exact minute. You were supposed to be at our front door and you said, Swiss time, I'm here.
There you go. I used to be late all the time, but not once I became ambassador. Infrastructure. They invest very long term in infrastructure, and we could learn a lot about how they don't just fix, but they maintain. And then one funny thing that I would always hear from students coming back from their exchange years is bread baking. The Swiss have extraordinary baked goods, and apparently we in the United States could learn a thing or two from them.
You know, when I go to Switzerland, I'm always fascinated by their democracy. They've got a quirky government with a revolving presidency. At any one time, some engaged Swiss people may not even know who's serving as their president. How does that work?
Well, to be clear, it's actually that they have a federal council that is very, very stable, and that they rotate who gets to serve as the head of state. It's sort of on a titular basis in their federal government. They have the same branches of an executive branch, a legislative branch, and a judicial branch that we have. Because of the direct democracy, I would argue they have a citizen branch. And what that allows them, that parliamentary model that is based on the United States model, they basically did V2. Version 2 of our Constitution, it allows them to be able to really have a longer term view. They're not worried about somebody getting unseated in 2 years. They also, when you vote for your parliamentary members on a cantonal basis, they basically, you know, I know in the United States there are a lot of conversations around ranked choice voting, around having more collective elections. They've got a lot of those types of structures already in place that makes the government more stable and ensures that there is perhaps less rotation, but I would argue more deliberation to move things forward in a more solid way.
Do you think much about the issue of money in politics and the importance of having an educated electorate when you think about Switzerland's success and how they're doing their democracy compared to the United States?
Everybody there studies citizenship, so that gives them an advantage. They vote 4 times a year, and because of their direct democracy, they take a direct hand in what's constitutionally set there or not. So they are much more engaged in their government and much more aware of the opportunities as a result of that engagement. And I think that that really helps them substantially remain among the top countries with trust in government and among the top in quality of life. And they are always among the top in terms of happiness as well.
And that's one of my themes when I talk about the United States compared to Europe. You know, they choose to work less. They choose to have less. They probably work 80% of the hours we do. They probably make 80% of the money we do. But they have more time with their families and they have more time to recreate.
Well, and in Switzerland, they actually work their tails off and they value work very, very highly. Mm-hmm. But they value life much more and they work to live. They don't live to work.
And I read that you also looked at the other way and what the Swiss might learn from us. And one of those things that we do that they could learn from would be a little more open, a little more gregarious.
There's openness, there's gregariousness. There's also innovation and a freedom to fail and learn from failure, something very unique that we have in the United States that really sets us apart in so many ways.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with former American ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein, Susie Levine. Susie, if you had the opportunity to help counsel American politicians on our national budget, if it could be redesigned to fit Swiss priorities, What would you recommend? What major changes would you like to see?
Well, as somebody who worked in the federal government and did actually design budgets and also worked at the state level where I had to oversee a budget, and when in my federal job, I had an $11 billion budget in the Department of Labor, I wish that we could focus more longer term and amortize our costs and our expenditures over a longer period of time and not be as subject to the vagaries of the political winds. And as a result, do more like what Switzerland does, where they invest very heavily longer term in infrastructure, in education, and really helping the world be better. They are investing very heavily, for example, in their Swiss development efforts, which is like our USAID, in countering violent extremism, which is how do you look upstream? How do you address challenges longer term so you don't have the problems to begin with?
That kind of assumes an electoral path that does not come with such radical swings from left to right, I would think.
They have a multi-party system as well and a parliamentary system that allows them to do that. Mm-hmm. And it is that parliament that then selects those members of their federal council. Also, what's fascinating about the federal council is they go for a unanimous support of something as there is a decision made. So they may disagree going into it, but the unwritten rule is that they then, once a decision is made, all stand behind it, no matter where they are politically in their positions.
Wow. We can learn a lot from our travels. We can certainly be inspired by how Switzerland is organizing its society. And Susie Levine, thank you for your service representing our country to Switzerland for so many years and all the work you've done before and since. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You have a nice time in Switzerland.
The political neutrality of Switzerland can allow them to have conversations with countries that the U.S. just can't have. Susie Levine explains how they've invested in demining Syria in a brief extra to today's interview. You can hear it with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. In just a bit, we'll hear how you can get to love winter when you have fun in the snow like they do in Anchorage. But first, we imagine the view from another planet on Travel with Rick Steves.